Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 153. We're your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brayden Oski.
I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Devin DeRee.
And this week, we're at PAX South!
PAX South 2018! I'm tired, man. We've been at this for 3 days. I'm exhausted. No, we had a great time at PAX South 2018. Today, we're going to be talking about the games we played here at PAX. We'll go over a little bit of gaming news and then our discussion topic this week about the games we played, a deep dive into those, because it's going to be a lot. Yeah.
Too much to mention in the intro. But,
Brett, stop doing that and cue the music. Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is January 16th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast.
Woohoo!
I want to remind everybody, on January 23rd, which is next Tuesday, you guys should come on out to Dallas, Texas, if you're in the area, and visit us at Braindead Brewing. We will be doing a live podcast all about Nintendo 64 games, as well as a special guest interview. And there's a tournament happening, which is exciting.
That's a lot happening in one night.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's already here.
I'm scared.
It was like last month we're talking about this.
So scared. It's going to be intense. Yeah, no. But anyway.
I plan on showing up and drinking beer.
Good.
That's a first.
Look at the Devin drinks beer now.
Man, it took a while, but Kevin, the guy who runs it, was like, hey, man, I've got a brew for you that you could try. And it was Star Wars themed and tasty. Yeah. So I was like, I guess I'll drink this for the rest of my life.
No idea.
Pretty good.
Which one was it, Dino?
It had Darth Vader in the title.
Darth Lambicus?
That's the one.
That's it. I know that one very well.
Very nice.
Because I drink it a lot.
So should
it's awesome.
Talk about where we are right now and what's going on?
Yeah. We're currently in a hotel room.
We are in a hotel room.
All our pants are off.
All of them.
And we have
no pants on.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's only for us. Save it for the outro.
No, we're in San Antonio, man. We're here for PAX South. PAX South 2018.
Hell yeah. We've gone through 2 out of the 3 days thus far and figured, we need to record a podcast and talk about everything we experienced.
The expo hall opens in 10 minutes.
Oh shit.
We got to hurry.
Oh, shit.
It'll be a 10-minute podcast.
All right. Bye, guys. I'm just kidding.
Just the biggest F you to our fans. Screw you guys. We're going to go have fun. No. We're here to record this real
anyway,
quick.
So in this segment, we're going to go talk about the games that we played at PAX South. And then if you come back to our discussion topic later on, we're going to go through our overall experiences, share some stories, all that good stuff.
Right.
So let's jump straight into some video games. First one I want to start with is Phantom Doctrine.
Holy crap.
Yes.
Phantom Doctrine, Creative Forge Games, the guys who made Hard West, I talked about on the podcast a couple months ago. Man, they are coming out with a new title, Phantom Doctrine, set in the Cold War in the 80s. Spy networks with secret agents and investigations, subterfuge, political intrigues, all kinds of crazy crap. I can't even like do it justice from the description. Like, it is insane.
I will say, just walking up, I don't know, it was just like I've seen a bunch of booths in the past where it was just like, oh, look, cool booth, but the game was very mediocre.
Yeah.
And then I saw the XCOM style gameplay, and then the more that we heard about it, I was like, my god.
Their booth was very ominous. You'll see it in our video that we got a chance to talk to the devs. Man, that booth was ominous. It was big.
Yeah.
It was a little scary. It was a little creepy because you see like this big gray scale booth and all this metalworking, plus like the map with the light up pinpoints of the map of like certain intrigue points.
That was
like,
pretty sweet.
Am I being spied on right now? Are they watching me?
Answers.
When I was walking around, we were going to go talk to the devs to see about getting the interview. They had the no trespassing signs all around. And I was like, oh, I'm not supposed to be on this side. I did the wrong thing. What am I doing?
You're tackled, shot, and then like just black bagged into some hole.
Exactly. Man, it was a cool game. There was a lot of depth to it.
There's a lot going on.
I mean, it just blew my mind that there was that part where you're doing the reconnaissance or whatever, and he showed you the little corkboard, and as you gather intel through the
game. That's a mini game in this game.
And you're like putting pieces. It reminded me of, do you remember in Life is Strange when you're trying to finalize the final ideas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
have a big, huge board, and you're trying to tie the pictures and information together.
I don't know. I didn't finish it yet.
Oh, you didn't finish it?
I know.
Well, don't talk about this so he can finish it. But if you want to like equate it to something, think back to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when Charlie Day is looking at the cork board. He's like, I need answers. And like, there's just the wires strung to all those pinpoint kind of things. That's a mini game in this game where you can like pick out keywords and phrases in a document, and you have to use those key phrases to pinpoint a certain place on a map. And while you're in your home base, you can send agents out to do reconnaissance on a map that you're about to have to go and do like stealth or combat in. The levels to which this game takes is astounding.
Yeah.
There's really so much detail here. I'm going to play the shit out of this game.
Then we like spent an hour in the game before we actually got to do the interview. It's so much in there.
Yeah, we spent so much time just doing like the pre-work before the actual mission took place.
I know. Like, man, there's a lot of like menu interaction in this game. Mm-hmm. And then you went in an investigation, and I didn't even think about the fact that there's also combat in this later on.
Then you've got the XCOM that...
so good.
Isometric view tactic style game, man.
So good.
It's so good.
So that's coming out.
I can't wait.
In 2018, you said, right?
Yes, they said
sometime 2018.
So what really got me, what really surprised me about this game was when you're like halfway into the mission,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it was like one of your allies has turned on you, and it's like, what?
Because in pure secret agent form, like some Bond movie from the 80s, you have things that you can do called trigger words, trigger phrases. Like, think back to the Captain America movie when Bucky hears those Russian phrases and he turns into Billy Badass and kills everyone.
Yeah.
You can do that in this game.
Yeah.
You can do that to other agents, but the other agent organizations, like the KGB, can do that to your team. So, like, combat starts, one of the bad guys says, fruitcake, and boom, your guy's going to start killing everyone on your team. You lose an ally, and you have a badass agent who's like, I'm carrying a machine gun. Rat-tac-tac-tac.
Yeah, but the woman who turned had a giant machine
gun. She had a giant gun.
It was pretty amazing.
Not good.
It was pretty amazing. So,
and then the helicopter came in and it just
helicopter came in and destroyed everything.
And I like how they show you, there's one thing that they mentioned that was unique to this game that most games don't do, but you can actually see the next move that's going to come.
Yeah.
So you can plan ahead.
Very tactics based. Yeah. Because
really
you can highlight enemies and it'll show you what their next movement or like action is.
Yeah. So you'll be in a place and you'll realize, oh crap, they're about to launch a helicopter strike here. Mm-hmm. I got to get out of Dodge before that happens.
Right.
So very cool game.
You can't really get out. I mean, you're not near a window or a door. You're kind of fucked.
You were kind of that like, one. That helicopter came and he had like three agents outside. He's like, I need to get inside like right now. I was like, yeah, you do. You need to take some cover, bro.
So let's talk about Warhammer Vermintide 2.
Oh my God.
We got to play that, which was a surprise.
How many hours did we sink into Vermintide 1?
Dude,
a lot.
I can
pull it up for you. It's a lot.
I probably got, I don't have a ton. I got like 30 or 40, but this guy probably has 5,000 and a half.
Well, it's not more than PUBG, which is at 150 hours. But,
but it's still a lot.
It's a lot. So
Vermintide 2, though.
Yeah, so Vermintide, those that haven't played it, is basically Left 4 Dead in the Warhammer universe.
Yep.
With rats.
Warhammer Fantasy. Yeah.
Well, now they have the Chaos, right?
The Chaos. You're fighting agents
big,
of
huge,
Chaos. Yep.
Like orc-like things that are way more
beefy.
Difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then
it's not just like, ooh, let me just take a couple of pop shots with the, you know, with my pistols or swing my hammer once or twice. No, like you're going to have to work for this one.
Yeah.
You're going to have to work for
the
this
yard
kill.
Anymore.
No. The Agents of Chaos, like, you know, you're not fighting full Chaos Demons yet. Well, you fought one. But just the normal enemies, like, they're huge, they're hulking, they take hits and they laugh at you like, you think you can, well, I'm gonna just keep shooting you, I guess.
Yeah.
It was when I jumped on it, it was very, it threw me through a loop because I didn't, I was like, what?
It's so visceral, man. It's so visceral. Just like,
blood splattering everywhere, explosions, the chaos, people are screaming and making fucked up noises, and you're trying to move around the field.
It's a very pretty looking game.
Yeah.
Now, in the pretty in the context of death and destruction kind of ways.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, they've really advanced the graphic technology in this game, which is awesome.
Yeah. And it was running on a laptop, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Because that some beautiful set pieces.
Imagine what it's going to look like when you actually get it. Oh, man.
4K.
Inside, I was like,
oh no.
Oh, gosh.
No, but so, seeing the actual destruction, cool. And like, it seemed like they just ran through right now. It's like you just rolled up on them finishing the destruction of this village or town.
Yeah,
forever.
This town was already
smoking
wrecked.
And just things everywhere. Like buildings knocked down and... So they had two new enemies that I noticed, and I don't know if one is an orc or not, but he was like a shaman. He could teleport behind you, teleport anywhere in the map. And I was like, holy fuck, like this is...
That's cool.
Yeah, like you'd be, you know, try to attack him, and then all of a sudden he'd go somewhere else. So it's like hard to get him down. Then you have the new, the rattling gun is now a flamethrower guy.
Yeah.
When he hits you, he slows you down.
Yeah.
I'm just like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
And then the best one was this giant... tank-like creature that had one small arm and one tentacle, and I got too close.
It was a chaos demon, man.
He grabbed me by his tentacles, threw me on the ground 5 times, and then threw me across the field.
Yeah.
And I was basically dead.
Yeah.
I was
like... Yeah, you didn't make it.
That's different.
Yeah.
This is extremely different.
Mm-hmm. You got wrecked. You got ship
the
wrecked.
The hulking racket was bad enough. I mean, running around and just throwing you about, you know, just at least you can kind of get away from him a little bit.
Not today.
Where's the elf? Just keep shooting it.
God, no, it was bad. It was awesome.
So
but
awesome.
You can tell like this is going to, you're going to absolutely need 4 people for this.
I don't want to play them.
Like a minimum 3, I think. Like 2 people will probably get wrecked. You're going to need like at least 3 to 4.
But that's what I love. I can't wait to play. I mean, again, co-op games. I feel like this is going to be the year of finally enjoyable co-op experiences.
Like fully immersive kind of co-op where you really are dependent on the coordination of your team to make stuff happen.
Exactly.
Because like in that game, in Vermintide 2, you're not going to be able to just have 4 people all playing big hammer wielding guys. You're going to need to have utility classes of like the rest that are needed.
Oh yeah.
To like clear the field or controllers in the field to like make sure you can disable a few enemies here and there and then take out the big ones.
I haven't done a lot of research on it yet, but I hope they have more classes this time.
Oh yeah.
So it's like so it's kind of like, hey, you know, these are the guys that we're comfortable playing, but here's a level where we don't know we're gonna need somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, type thing where it's like we really have to figure.
Well, I could tell like the guy playing like the AI that was the dwarf, the squat. Like that guy had 2 axes in his hand. It was like spinning around the battlefield, like drawing people to him. So I'm like, he may not be doing a whole lot of damage, but he is pissing everybody off, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good. You go to him.
Yeah. A little take motherfucker.
Yeah. It was awesome.
I love this. I love that world. Anyway.
So Lightfall. Let's talk about that for a minute. Bishop Games. It's a little indie platformer game coming out on the Switch.
Right.
PlayStation and Xbox. And Steam too, but first on Switch, which is really exciting.
Well, I thought they were doing a simultaneous launch.
Yes, simultaneous.
He said
Steam
the consoles were coming later.
Steam and Switch first.
Steam and Switch
is happening first. Yeah, and then console. Yeah. The other consoles are coming
Xbox
later.
Xbox and PS4 later.
Yeah. So Devin, you played this most extensively.
Tell me
your thoughts.
So basically, if I had to choose an art style to compare it to, I would say it's going to be kind of like Limbo, that very kind of almost forced perspective of the silhouette and, you know, and the stuff in the background and foreground. You play this little character. You don't know the name. You don't know the purpose, but it's like this area that's always night. It's always dark. And it's a puzzle platformer, man. You just got to run around, your controls, or you control this weird cube thing that you can create a platform underneath you. You can throw it at enemies. You can move it around the area.
So cool.
It was really cool.
Very, I mean, just the art style alone is enough to draw me in.
Right.
And then just hearing about the stories, very ominous.
Yeah.
We didn't know enough. Luckily, we got an interview, but he still didn't tell us too much about everything.
Right, right. Which was great because it sounds like, and from you know what I played, the story does seem like it's going to be pretty substantial and pretty in-depth.
Hope so.
Just the way that it's... That intro is very mysterious, but very whimsical, too.
Right.
It's a very engaging story, so I'm looking forward to getting the full boat. They said March?
March yeah, 2018, March. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, I love the gameplay mechanics look really, really solid.
Yeah, it's solid. It's simple.
Yeah.
I say simple. It's not... the mechanics themselves are simple, but your application to use them in every single level is where the intricacy comes in. So that's really where it's going to shine.
When you were creating those... Because when you're jumping, you can press a button that'll create a box that you can kind of stand on.
Yep.
And it looked to me that every box that you created in this period of time changed... visual shape, like visual look.
Is
there a limitation how many you can do in a certain period of time?
The shape was. It was anytime you jumped and hit X again and the box appeared underneath you, it changed the way the box looked slightly in the center, and it showed you how many uses you had left.
Okay.
So it was like this weird, like diamond shaped kind of, or diamond material looking triangle. And every time you used it, a piece of the triangle was chipped away until you had like just one little dot in the center, which meant you're out.
Yeah.
So I hope you can make it to whatever jump you were about to do, because man, it was intense.
That's
it was awesome,
nice.
Though.
That's nice. Yeah. Very cool game. Not something I expected. But
right, right.
Very cool.
But it was cool watching you try to get that gem.
Yeah.
So there's gems hidden throughout the place, which I didn't know actually if you collect them. In a single checkpoint area, from checkpoint to checkpoint, they show you at the next checkpoint how many gems are in that area. So those little, I guess those little holes.
Oh, see,
there.
I missed that.
So yeah,
you got one of two in that one part.
I guess you guys were talking because I had the headset on, just listening to the amazing music and like.
So and he was saying when you collect those gems, dialogue. They open lore for you, which I thought was great to like.
Well, now I have to go back. God.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to go back and play
this
again so bad.
Like these platformer games, I like them. I like getting through them. I don't always want to explore so much. It just depends how I feel, you know, at the moment. But to know that there are nuggets of...
You got the option to do that. Yeah.
Rewards.
It's like, I'm curious about the world, so I want to find out more.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's even better, this is coming out on the Switch at launch, man. This is the perfect Switch game. Like, it really is.
Did you notice how literally every booth we went to, the first question after we asked them when it comes out, is this coming to the Switch? Is it coming to the Switch?
Is this coming to the Switch?
Not, it's not worth my time.
I know, right?
Can I take this game with me to work is my question. I want to take this game to work with me.
I mean, I don't know how y'all feel, but these kind of games, like, I don't want to play on my PC or my PlayStation 4. They're great games.
Yeah, they're great.
But having... It's being having these on the Switch just makes me want to play them.
Being able to play them on your TV, great. That's perfect. Like any other game we've been playing since we started, you can play them on your living room TV. But then the option to be able to take that with you and just play that. This is such a quick, easy game to just pick up and start playing.
Right.
That's so cool.
Right. I guess my mentality is if I'm going to sit down, I really want to get into some kind of like heavy game that like
yeah,
I have to like set mind
for. Yeah, pulls me into, really immerses me into it.
Yeah.
So there's another game out there. There's a booth, a publisher booth called Versus Evil, and I had seen them at QuakeCon, and they had a game called At Sundown, which me and Austin sat down and played for a little bit, which is really awesome. I've talked about it before on a previous podcast, but it's a 4-player cooperative game that's coming out on consoles where as you shoot, that's when you show yourself in the arena space, really neat.
That's so messed.
And it's colors, so like you shoot different colors based on what you are. And that was, they've refined that a lot since last time I played. It was awesome. But Versus Evil also had another game from Obsidian, which if any of you RPG fans on the PC may remember, Pillars of Eternity is a game that came out a couple years ago and was hugely successful. Like everybody just adores this game. And now Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire is in production and coming out sometime this year, and we got to play it and talk to them about that game.
Right.
So Devin, you played more than any of us, I think. What do you think?
Cool. Fairy Divinity-esque.
Yeah, very much a fantasy RPG. You got your party of, you know, characters.
Is it five?
I think it was five. That was cool. Five characters or five of your like support. I can't remember what she referred to them as, but essentially they're like your supporting characters or your cohorts essentially. But man, just like the idea of this game with all the factions that it had, with all the different fantasy settings, like it was a lot of fun. I wish I'd had more time to like
really
appreciate the intro that we got to play. And it's hard to like, how do you demo, you know, an RPG that's supposed to take 70, 80, 90, 100 plus hours?
Yeah, because she said the first one, people were averaging at least 60 plus hours on Steam. And this one, she said, averaging. Even more so.
Yeah.
So it's a huge, huge game.
Right. I thought it averaged more.
Well, yeah. And she's on so that. She was like, "This is that's if you're going to like, if you're just doing just like the story missions and powering through that kind of stuff, like
okay, straight through.
Yeah, if you're just doing like straight through plays, none of the side quests, none of the other like. She even said like each of your cohorts has their own storyline that you can explore, which is going to take up more time. So I'm like, fuck, that's awesome. I'm in.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure it's going to be kind of like, you know, any of the other massive RPGs out there where you're like, I don't give a shit about your story. Where does it just carry my things? Let's move on. Yeah,
right. I love the look of this game though. The graphic engine is really solid. Like look at the water.
Yeah.
Man, it was pretty. And
sorry.
I'm just saying, man, water is
that's
great.
What stood out to you.
But what's interesting is she was saying that water. It's gonna be on a bunch of archipelagos.
Yeah.
So there's different islands. So every island will probably have a different look to it.
Each island's going to have a different look. And each island also has its own faction.
Yeah.
And you have to interact with all these different like empires and factions. And it's like, how do you influence one and not get pissed off from another?
Right.
I mean, like there's no winning on all of them. Like some of them, you're like, well, I guess I'm going to have to kill. I'm going to have to commit genocide on this one.
Oh, yeah. So it's fine. Awesome game.
It's fine.
Well, I did y'all hear that they say this is a multiplayer, like you can have our co-op, like you can have up to five people.
I don't think so.
Four people.
I think this is a single player experience. I think
that's sad.
Yeah, I mean, I get it though.
Yeah,
it's single player. No, I get it.
Single player only.
I mean, just like with Divinity, I prefer to play it with people that actually play it by myself.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
That's just me though. So.
So I played a little game at the Annapurna Pictures area, the guys that published What Remains of Edith Finch, which we loved.
Yep.
Donut County. We've talked about this briefly in the past. It's this little game. Tell me the
Katamari Damacy.
There we go. It's akin to that idea, but in this one you have a hole that you control and you move the hole around the world, and as you collect things into said hole, the hole gets bigger and bigger, so you can essentially perform puzzle things to make this hole bigger and advance the next area.
Right.
And I thought you would just like move around all over this world and just keep moving infinitely.
Right.
But there's actually there's a story element to this, and there's parts where you jump into cutscenes and have like a text conversation with one of your friends. It's a very cute style in which it looks like these characters are animals. They're not humans, but the way that they're interacting with one another seems like they're much younger people, and they're just texting back and forth about something. And then you go into move this hole around to make these things happen. And I love the interactivity with the world, because it starts out simple where you just collect boxes in your hole and it gets bigger, and then you start grabbing things. But then there's a part where there's this old lady that was sitting on a bench, sitting on a chair. So I would go over there and grab the chair and knock it down and try and like knock her out of her chair to collect the chair into the
hole.
How
rude of you.
I know, it's terrible.
How rude of you.
And then there was a part where there was a hot air balloon that was tied up to the wall with these metal braces and stuff. So I would have to move my hole underneath the hot air balloon, which would create this, like, cause the flame to flame up and push the hot air balloon up to, like, strip the wires from the side and stretch it up in the air. So there's a lot of cool interactivity with the world.
Yeah.
Very reminiscent to me of when I played Everything. That kind of exploratory world in which there isn't
very necessarily, it's very whimsical, it seems, as well. The art style seems like, not, I don't want to say cartoony, but definitely very vibrant and bright.
Yeah. So it's a very, really cool, very neat game made by one person, and I don't know when it comes out, but it played really well, and I'm looking forward to it. So Donut County, check it out. It's good stuff.
Good stuff.
We also got our hands on Divinity Original Sin 2, which is out.
Yeah.
For the next hour, that's all we're going to talk about. We can talk about these guys and this game.
Let's save the rest of it for the next discussion segment. But the game itself, Austin's played this. He's talked about it on the podcast, I believe. You and I
played the first one.
Oh, you played the first one. I haven't played it at all.
At all.
So,
which is why you sucked at it.
Which is why I sucked at it.
It's okay. I sucked at it the first time too. It's different.
It's daunting.
I mean, you pick up things that actually have no use to you, and I didn't realize that. Things in the world have use to you. You know.
Yeah.
And in this case, if I pick up a box, the box does nothing for me.
But
I'm carrying this box around, and eventually it gets slow, and you can't move anymore. And I'm like, damn. There was one girl that was like literally trying to seduce me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man.
Yeah.
This girl wants something.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
But what are her real intentions?
Well, exactly.
So, you know, if for anybody who didn't know, Divinity 2 Original Sin is the sequel to the first one. Basically a fantasy RPG with details out the wazoo. Like everything from a story-based RPG is ramped up tenfold in a game like this. Like, the details they put into making this are incredible.
Yeah.
These devs, when we talk to these guys, like, holy cow, what a team.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are incredible.
And I just want to mention that their writing team was nine people on that entire writing team that writes all these different choices and pathways and stuff.
Over a million words, each of which is actually spoken and voice acted. That is amazing to me.
Yeah.
I was surprised by that, especially playing through the first level of the game.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Everything is spoken. Like, how cool is that? You actually get to hear these voice actors speaking to you for all these, like, just subtle NPCs. Even just the guards who were just giving you the throwaway dialogue. Watch yourself, prisoner. That's awesome. I mean, it just felt so cool. And the environment is always just, as always, it's completely interactive. So if you've got a patch of fire on the ship that we were on and it's blocking your way, you can pick up a water barrel and throw it on top of that fire and it will douse the fire so you can continue and walk on.
Right.
That's amazing. I love that kind of detail.
There was a lot to explore, a lot of people to interact with, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah.
And the way that they handle the cooperative mode is very interesting. Mm-hmm. There were slight moments where it was a little disorienting, but I do like how if you're in the same area together where you can share a screen,
You share the screen.
But if you trail away from each other,
if I go away from you out of sight,
naturally does split screen.
It goes to split screen
very seamlessly.
Or how you can be in dialogue with somebody and I can walk up. I can't influence the dialogue, but I can listen
to it. Yeah.
I can listen in and watch your dialogue choices.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Yeah.
So
it blew me away the way this game plays. Like, I have to relearn how to play games.
Yeah.
It's just,
no,
I'm not used to this.
It takes every, like, preconceived notion you've had about RPGs, and it throws them out. Like, you can kill everyone. If you want to kill the main guy who's been giving you quests, by all means do so. If you want to, you're not going to be able to, you're going to have a hard time continuing the story probably, but you can.
Right.
Like that's incredible. That's great.
And this is up to four players, right?
Co-op. Four player co-op.
Gosh, we got
with that. a full array of varying classes that you can be.
Oh yeah.
As well as races. You could be an undead skellyman.
It was so reminiscent when I was going through that class system and the race system and all that. I was like, this is D&D right here.
What did I say?
I was a dragon fighter. It was cool.
Yeah. You were a lizard man fighter.
Yeah. It was amazing.
You looked weird.
I mean, I want to look weird.
I was a wizard.
You were a wizard.
A better wizard than you.
You were this blonde wizard That was
squishy. The Micah, the one of the devs there who was talking with us, he's like, Devin, you made you. I was like, shut up. Yeah, I did. Made him blonde with a beard.
Exactly.
Whatever, shut up.
But yeah, very cool. So stay tuned to our discussion topic. We're going to talk about our experiences interacting with them as developers and talking to them all that stuff.
They actually will probably come on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have them on the podcast for sure. But that's going to be it for our games. We're going to take a quick break and come back with our gaming news. But I want to mention that if you guys like what you hear on this podcast, please take the time to donate to us on Patreon. For as little as $12 a year, you can make this podcast better and get some awesome rewards.
$12 a year?
Such as early access to videos.
Oh, man.
And also stay tuned to our YouTube channel because we're going to be dropping a ton of videos from PAX
South.
Yeah,
we got a ton, man.
A lot of stuff. So check that out. And we're going to take a quick break. Come back with our gaming news.
From around the world.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It's time for our video game news this week. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry.
News.
We're going to cover a lot of new stuff. I'm going to go back to an old article from December that I think is worth mentioning. And we're going to end with some Overwatch League. So it's going to be pretty awesome. So stick around because it's going to get crazy. Starting with...
Yes, it is.
Starting with, Nintendo had their first Direct of 2018. And, you know, last year, Nintendo was awesome, obviously.
Right.
They dropped so many things. We were like, what can they do in 2018? Like, what? We asked your Mario.
How was 2018 going to top this year?
Yeah.
They're going to do it. They're going to figure it out.
So, they announced a lot of things, some old, some new. Not really old, but just additions, and then announced some new games. But the first thing, and probably the most important thing in this room to Devin, is Dark Souls Remastered. It's coming to the Nintendo Switch.
That is phenomenal.
I wish I could express into words the simultaneous joy and despair I have at this being remastered.
Yes.
You're never going to play any other game now.
Look, man. Look, don't fucking judge me over there. All right?
The Switch of Souls.
Switch of Souls.
Like, I feel embarrassed even to admit, but I'm going to have to, that I'm about to buy this game three more times.
It's insane.
Are you going to get it on PlayStation 2?
I'm going to get it on Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch. I'm a consumer whore, Austin.
Wait. I also want to add to that there is a Dark Souls trilogy box set coming out that's $450 with Dark Souls Remastered, Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, and all the DLC and like collectible shit. And I guarantee you that somebody in this room is going to buy that box set.
That sounds actually pretty cool.
Yeah, right? $450 is crazy.
That sounds
fucking
sexy.
But it's everything. It's all of it.
That sounds so sexy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll just buy the box and rub myself on it. Oh, God.
Just gonna be sleeping with it. Wake up. Honey, what was it bad with you?
What is this?
Dark Souls.
It's Dark Souls. Get out.
So Dark Souls Remastered is coming out May 25th.
May 25th.
That's
we're going to have
cool.
The original with the DLC as well as the co-op. Elements essentially from Dark Souls 3, so
yeah.
You can summon up to 5 other people into your world. So it's going to get nuts.
Oh.
It's going to get bonkers.
I'll see you in there.
Oh man,
I'm very happy because I wanted to go back and watching Brett play on the Xbox. Didn't look that bad actually, but
yep.
to have
it holds up
HD graphics.
It holds up.
Just makes it even better.
Oh yeah. Then Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition is coming to the Switch. This is a Zelda-themed battle game from the Wii U that has all the characters, map, missions, and DLC from the Wii U and 3DS versions coming in spring 2018.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Yeah?
I'm watching it right now. I'll get it.
Looks cool.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it, actually.
I love the characters and the giant chickens.
The giant chickens. And this has me pretty excited. It's not a new game, but it is the Wii U Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
Yeah.
Is being re-released on the Switch on May 4th. So this has the full game as well as a new mode featuring Funky Kong, who has some new moves that make the game a bit more beginner-friendly. And it's single-player or local co-op, which is awesome. So Donkey Kong is coming to the Switch very soon in May. So that's two games are dropping in May on the Switch.
Wow.
That's pretty wild. Pretty excited about that.
More Switch magic, man.
Right? Super Mario Odyssey is going to get a little bit of extra content with Luigi's Balloon World. There's two modes, one called Hide It, which will give players 30 seconds to hide balloons throughout the world. The second mode is Find It, where players will attempt to find balloons hidden by other players in the world.
I needed another reason to play Mario Odyssey again.
Yeah, well, there you go. Now you have it. It's coming. And that comes out February, so we're going to have that soon. Now, this is pretty exciting here. We have a new game coming out to the Switch. Mario Tennis Aces. This is Mario Tennis, guys. It's back, and it's on the Switch.
Did we play the first one? Anyone play the Mario Tennis?
I haven't played it, but I know Louise is just obsessed over it.
I loved Mario Tennis. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was freaking great.
I never played it. I was surprised because
it was on the Wii.
There's so many of them.
It's another friendship destroyer, but it's awesome.
Yeah, it was on. They had Mario Tennis 64, and I think they have one on every console thereafter. But it's just, okay, it's one of those ones that slipped past me. But this one, I mean, I love the fact that this is one of those games that's kind of like Mario Kart in that it brings people into the racing game genre that normally wouldn't play racing games. This is a game that brings people into the sports genre that wouldn't normally play sports games.
Right.
So that's very cool. Very accessible. And right, it's coming out Mario in 2018.
It's Mario.
It is kind of funny how you put Mario onto something like a sports game and people lose their damn minds.
Yeah. There's a story mode.
Because I never would play just a tennis game. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That sounds boring as sin.
Pro Evolution Tennis 2018.
The tennis on the original PlayStation? Ugh.
Yeah.
I think it's just because they make it so...
It's fun. It's like the Mario fun twist. What I mean by fun is like you got fun spikes to do and it's the cartoony fun stuff going on. You play the characters and it's a good tennis game. It's going to be fun.
Awesome. Mario Tennis Aces 2018. Mario Plus Rabbids is going to get Donkey Kong. So that's happening. I don't know if you guys have played any Mario Plus Rabbids recently.
Yeah,
I need to get Mario.
It's a good game. It really is. Like, there was some people, I was listening to another podcast, and they were saying that it's one of their Game of the Year contenders, kind of. And it's actually very, very good. It's very XCOM, but it's very, very fantastic. And I need to return to it. It's very difficult as well. So, very everything.
Hmm.
Pokken Tournament's going to get a new fighter. Kirby Star Allies has a release date announced, March 16th. So, you know, last year I was talking about how Nintendo managed to somehow bring out a pretty big title every single month after the console came out.
Right.
I feel like that's not going to stop. Now, January, we don't have anything big coming out for it.
No.
But February, we now know that we're going to get Kirby. No, that's March, sorry. We're going to get stuff in February that I mentioned earlier. And then March, it's Kirby. And then we don't know April yet, possibly. But May, we get two big games. So it's a lot of stuff, you know?
It's kind
of
nice.
February, we're getting Faye.
Oh, yeah, Faye.
I don't know if y'all heard about this, yeah? You
yeah.
Okay, very cool design, kind of like... what was the game we just talked about? The one you played? Oh, I forgot the name.
Tunic?
No, the Still Dark.
Nightfall.
Sorry. I don't know why I forgot that.
Lightfall.
It's very Lightfall-ish, but obviously it's a 3D game with completely different story.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of nice seeing that we got a lot of these games coming out in that kind of April, May area so that we have something to play in the summer.
Damn it, Nintendo. Yeah. Why did they do this to us?
It's awesome, though. Love every friggin' second of it.
I haven't been backlogged and this bad with games for a long time.
It's okay. It's a good problem to have. It's better than the alternative.
Of having nothing to play.
True.
Correct.
What do I do with my life?
Those days are over.
Yeah, right. That's some Nintendo Direct right there. There's some other stuff that came out. You can check that online. But those are the big dog announcements that happened. CES also happened last week, which was the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yeah.
And with that, we now have the first ever wireless Vive Pro.
Oh, man.
Meaning you don't have a wire attached to your head that's dragging you around everywhere.
Don't just say wire. Say what it is. You have like this apparatus wire cabling
thing.
Like, yeah, thing just completely.
I like what I said better because it's just wire. It's simpler.
I hate you. I hate you so much.
Yeah, this is very interesting. I wish this came out in the first
when
year
you bought it.
Its release. I, you know, it's very possible. At this point in time, like, I whipped out my Vive after a long time of being in the closet, probably almost a year.
Yeah.
And I had fun, but it's just like, I was reading an article, it's probably this one thing, it's just like, you know, there's over 2,000 games on the Vive Steam store, and it's like, it still feels very, very shallow.
Right.
Which is sad, like, we finally got this technology and it's up and running and there's all these games that you can play, but there's still not anything that's worthy of, you know, consumer consumption. And Brett broke his phone.
This is the fifth time I've dropped my iPhone X and it has yet to crack. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
You're going to run out of luck eventually.
Yeah. I know.
You're going to run out of that luck.
Yeah, I think it's what's interesting about it is that, I mean, first generation is always going to be not as good as what we're going to see later. And when it comes out, we're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing technology. And then usually the second or third generation is when they finally come to, like, they learn how to iterate it to be a form factor product that really works. And, you know, I mean, look at Nintendo. You know, they had to go through the Wii and the Wii U to get to the Switch. So it has all of those things built into it, but it took them three generations to reach that point. And I think with VR, it's even more so that these developers are having to, I mean, we're only finally seeing stories come out that are actually not more any more than tech demos, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting. I think this will allow them to do the things that they've been waiting so long to do, but you can't really do it when you're stuck up the cord and don't want to trip and fall and bust your head open, you know?
Right.
So
this would be a great revival of the VR. PlayStation seems to be killing it to some degree, but
yeah, they're doing really good.
I haven't really heard much about Vive and Oculus.
Yeah, Oculus these, is still like,
upgrades.
Their store is still getting upgraded left and right. Like I log That's into good. There once every couple weeks, and there's always a new game out there that I want to buy, but I'm like, I need to finish my other backlog first before I buy any of these things.
Well, it's nice that, you know, if you really want to just jump in once in a while, you can play something.
Right.
And but yeah, I agree with you. As soon as these cords have been an issue, and hopefully now they really do expand upon what they want to do.
Yeah.
Especially with, since now the Vive Room could be significantly bigger.
Right, yeah.
So, and I think arcade should have a VR room.
Yeah.
Like, hey, pick a game for, I don't know.
We've got to be close to that.
I mean, come on.
We've got to be close to a moment. And it doesn't even have to be an arcade. Like, I mean, it can be really any other kind of like venue that shows entertainment of some kind. But we got to be close to this time where we're like, there's going to just be a community VR area.
Right.
Where people can enjoy a VR game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Google announced their new Mirage Pro, which is a VR headset that does not require Mirage Solo, does not require a phone to put it in there. And that's pretty cool because this isn't to the level of the Oculus and the HTC Vive and stuff like that, but it's very close. So it has 110 degree field of view, 4 gigs of RAM, Qualcomm mobile processor, has a 1440p screen and 64 gigabytes of internal storage. So this is meant to compete with the Oculus Go, which is their standalone headset thing. But seeing these things come out, like I could see this type of technology in the community space where you have five of these that can interact with one another in the same room.
Right.
And hopefully if they use those sensors and stuff, they can detect each other in that space. So you could have laser tag basically without guns. I mean, you could have a gun in your hand or whatever, but you're playing virtual laser tag, which would be a lot more immersive.
It'd be like the Star Trek laser guns.
Phasers.
So glad you brought that up because Star Trek Bridge Crew now does not need VR. So if you want to play that with your friends with PSVR, you can play that with them and doesn't really matter whether you're in VR or not.
I am the captain now.
Wait, what? I don't understand. You have to play it on PSVR, but it doesn't.
No. Like if you
want to play it on PSVR
and Devin doesn't, Devin can still play Star Trek Bridge Crew with you. He just won't be in the VR experience. I gotcha. Yeah. So that's exciting because
I'll just be looking at the weapon systems.
Right.
Photon torpedoes online, sir.
I feel like being one of the underlings of the captain would be a lot funner because I actually get to pull levers and stuff while the captain just sits there. It's like, hey.
No, I love that. You. I love that idea.
Yeah. Do that.
Bring up engine readings.
Sir, yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Say that shit again. Anyways, move on.
Gosh.
That's why I got boner.
So let's talk about some Destiny for a brief moment here. This happened back in December, but I want to revisit it because we missed it when we took our 3-week break. The DLC came out, Curse of Osiris, and it became clearly evident that players who hadn't bought DLC were locked out of activities they were able to play. So Bungie acknowledged this after the fact and said, we made a mistake and we're changing how things work. So you've been playing. You got the DLC, right, Devin?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Oh, man. Nobody has it.
Dude, Destiny took a backseat. Like once all these other freaking games came out, and I dedicated a lot more time to them.
That's true. Well, they apparently fixed that stuff, but there were still issues with it because last time I jumped into it to beat the story, I noticed that there was still content that was in there that I couldn't get into.
Right.
Like there were certain Crucible missions that I couldn't access and stuff like that, which is fine, but it made people very upset that, you know, they were locked out. And I think when the new DLC came out, it also slowed down the progression if you didn't have the DLC. I believe that may have happened as well.
Yeah, apparently there's been an issue in the past, which I don't really remember, but I watched a video about it.
Yeah. So basically, you wouldn't be able to play activities that your friends were playing if they had it. Kind of like with, you know, whenever people have the premium pass for Battlefield or whatever and get the DLC maps and they can't play with their friends because they don't want to pay $50 for an additional map, that same thing kind of happened. So people got upset and that went down. So they're making a bunch of changes to it and it shouldn't require you to upgrade if you don't want to play certain activities like Trials of Osiris and things of that nature. Yeah. So
just blows me away that they would just start locking content like that. Especially with something so successful.
I mean, they want people to upgrade.
Well, it just makes sense. Like, here's a different map or here's a different turn.
And whether it was intentional or not intentional, probably a lot of people would believe it to be intentional. I think it was maybe they were trying to, like, dip their toes in the pool to see if they could pull off a EA. And I think they was pretty like, nope, we are not doing that.
That's dangerous. Super dangerous.
That is dangerous territory.
We want to play with that fire.
Yeah. No.
That's fire. Yeah,
you don't want to poke that bear.
So there's some good fire to talk about. Overwatch League started last week.
Man,
that's the big huge.
These players,
Overwatch League.
I feel inadequate. I feel like I should never play Overwatch again.
I feel that way too. The amount of speed that was happening in that game, I was like,
Jesus Christ.
Decisions.
I'm talking split. There's people who are playing like Roadhogs, my usual one that I pick, and like moving him around the field like a ninja that I'm like, I've never thought to do that. Wow.
So I don't know if you're watching the Soul versus Dallas Fuel.
Yeah,
and there was which one was it? It was the one with the hole in the middle. I forgot the net.
Ilios.
Ilios.
Yeah. So someone was playing Pharah, obviously, and it was Sol, and they had a Mercy on her. So
yeah.
Obviously, she's
flying around way up in the air.
She's a god of disguise.
Oh, yeah.
My bae is a god of disguise.
Oh my god.
She's my bae. I would marry.
It used to be that all you had to worry about was a Pharah up there, and now you have to worry about two motherfuckers. Now you're like, as a Roadhog, I don't know who to hook first. They're both hurting me.
So one of the guys on Soul was just flying around, and you know they really had Dallas Fuel stopped at the fucking fence right there where you come around the corner. And so they're all there. They're about to try to make a push. And then Soul, the fire on Soul just drops down like a rock, takes damage, and then just rains fucking hellfire on them right in their faces. There's like sweeping across, and this like takes out two or three, and I was like, dude, if like, I would have done that, I would have been obliterated.
Yeah, they have a strategy. Like, I don't think I can think that many steps ahead. Like, yeah. they are in a whole new plane. Like, they've opened up their third eye of Overwatch and are like way further into that than I am.
I was sitting there watching them like run around and stuff like that, and I think they have memorized in their head every single timer of all of their abilities, so the second their ability comes ready to launch, they already have their cursor aiming at whoever, or their crosshair aiming at whoever they're going to hit that attack with, and they hit it like instantly. And then they wait the next 4 or 5 seconds.
I'd be curious to know what kind of like practice goes into that.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
They play every day, I'm sure, all day.
Oh yeah.
Like, can you imagine? I have to do that.
I have a job.
Yeah, I know. But did you see...
this is their job.
If you go and read our latest article called Rivals on theinnergamer.net, Luis talks about the pay and the time and stuff like that. And they get... There's a... I'm probably wrong, but I thought it was like 500,000 for the whole season, each player gets.
Jesus. Well,
I can find out for you.
Yeah. And then there's a two or three million prize pool throughout the whole tournament. So I was like, God dang.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Maybe it was like 50,000. Sorry. I know they just get paid more than
still,
that.
Yes, they still good. Still good.
Better than me. And I'm a.
You're a fucking firefighter.
Job. Yeah. Firefighter paramedic.
Yeah, firefighter, paramedic even.
I have double certs.
Yeah, so from Louise's article, teams can have anywhere from 6 to 12 players on their roster and must provide players with a minimum salary of $50,000 a season plus benefits. Each team will play a total of 40 matches over the course of the 6-month regular season, and the teams with the best record will go on to play in a playoff for a shot at the grand finals. There will be a $3.5 million prize pool available to teams throughout the course of its inaugural season. So
crazy.
That's
insane.
Awesome. So yeah, go to theinnergamer.net/read to finish the quick guide to the Overwatch League.
I'm gonna just reiterate a point real quick. Remember when your parents said you're not gonna get paid for playing video games all day? I literally could get paid and get benefits. Fuck you.
Yeah, and benefits. That's the crazy.
Just look
part.
At Markiplier, over $6 million a year, probably more now.
Jesus.
So one thing I want to touch on with the Overwatch League that I find really awesome about it is that they, like, this got a lot of press. Like, there was ads everywhere. I mean, Blizzard put a ton of money into this to promote it and everything. But I think what really helped them out a lot is that, you know, when you watch sports, every city, major city or whatever, has a sports team, or every state has a team. Dallas Cowboys, Philadelphia Eagles. You know, you got the Los Angeles, what are they called now? The Rams or whatever. They changed their name or something like that. But there's all these different teams for a city. And that hasn't happened. Like, you have the Cloud9 esports team and all that stuff. They just have a name. OWL decided, let's actually make region-based teams. So you have Seoul Dynasty, you had Dallas Fuel, you have all these teams that have a representation in an area that people can get behind.
And I it's so funny you say that just now, because that is exactly what I felt when I started to like look into this and start like reading it behind. I'm like, oh, we have a Dallas team. Oh, we're repping Dallas?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, we're repping Dallas.
And a Houston team.
And a Houston
mostly
team.
Mostly Dallas.
But Dallas Fuel, man. Like, watching those, Jesus, good God, I am a terrible Overwatch player. I will admit I'm garbage compared to those guys.
They are very, very Texan. Like you could tell like they're from the area. That's really
awesome.
Yeah,
you could tell they're Dallas guys.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, though, because I was... So you mentioned that, but a lot of those guys are not from Texas, which is crazy to me.
Really?
Yeah, no, because I was watching the lineup of people that were playing,
right?
And there was a guy, they're all from all over the place, but they're repping Dallas because they might live here now or whatever. But like, they aren't a lot of them weren't originally from there. Some of them were from out of the country, which is crazy. But that's still, it's so cool that, you know, there is that Dallas representation, and we can get behind that. Like, we have an association with that just because it's Dallas and we're near there and it's awesome. And
I did have a little part of myself, you know, it felt like I had a little part of myself in that at stake with those guys. And I mean, that's typical sports. So
yeah, and that's what that makes the fact that they also branded everybody so well. Like everybody's got their own team logo. They got team colors, very distinctive team colors. So people are gonna now be buying like blue and white colors to represent Dallas Fuel, and Seoul Dynasty had their colors going on, and everybody's got their own color scheme and scans within the game that makes it easy when you're watching the game to tell that, hey, there's two different teams fighting here.
Yeah.
Right.
But then also like you can rep those colors in your region. So
it's God dang it, Overwatch. Very, it makes cool. So much more money now.
Yeah.
It just gobs the money from this.
How long ago did this game come out?
2 years.
Oh, 2 years ago? Oh, that's right. Still killing it.
Still killing it.
So good.
It's a fantastic game.
I kind of want to go home and play it now.
I know, right?
So that's going to wrap up our news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we'll talk about it next week. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, give us a review and rating on iTunes. We're going to take a quick break, come back with our discussion on PAX South 2018.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Our discussion this week is going to be on PAX South 2018. I want to advise you guys that we will not have a video of this segment, but we are going to have a ton of videos from PAX South. So make sure you go to youtube.com/innergamer to see all of those great things that we're going to be putting out. And we also have a special guest joining us right now. Lizette is here with us, which is, she's our new producer on set in our convention lives of things.
You can say what it is she does. She helps us fucking dramatically do our jobs.
Yeah. She like helps us edit things, and she's like recording things and making sure Austin doesn't
telling Devin how to shuffle when on camera. Yeah. Like shuffle two steps to the left. That's too far.
I'm really just showing you a new dance move, Devin. So
that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was joining us down here this weekend at PAX South, and tell me your experiences thus far. This is your first time at PAX, right?
It is.
Did you have fun?
I had a blast. It was very unexpected blast, actually.
God, wow. It was fun.
It was that. Amazing.
So I feel like we had the most fun this year. Like, I mean, I know it's slightly work, but like...
Well, yeah, usually like I'm like, oh, I'm taking a vacation to go work some more. But this time we finally kind of got our feet under us.
Yeah, it was a good time.
We got a groove going on. Like, we know what we're doing now. So we kind of like, relax a little bit, at least.
Remember the first year we came here and we were like so incredibly nervous?
Oh, it was the worst. We didn't know what we're doing.
I didn't want to
walk up to anybody and like say anything. And I was like, I don't know if they're going to say yes or not.
We were actually looking. Well, Austin last night was showing me like the old videos that you guys were like produced. And we were just laughing so hard. Travis Stramer on there. He's like, what do you got here?
We didn't know what he was doing.
No.
It's all right. Hey, man. You got to start somewhere. Humble beginnings.
Exactly. So PAX South, man, this was not as big, actually, as I thought it was going to be in terms of capacity and everything.
They brought up a good point about that when we talked to a couple of people there. The last year's PAX South was when we got the introduction of the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
So Nintendo had their giant Switch display there. And, man, that brought a fucking crowd.
Yeah. And this year we had, I would say Capcom was probably the biggest booth.
Yeah. The Monster Hunter World was probably the biggest of the
display.
Booths
yeah.
The biggest display to play Monster Hunter World.
But there was still a lot of, big stuff happening there. But what I like about PAX is that you get a lot of attention paid to the indie games. Like, I'm fine with there not being, the Far Cry 5 and Ubisoft displays and all that stuff.
We don't need that shit. It's all about the indies.
Smaller games and
go to Indie Alley, man.
Yeah. And what's fascinating is that these smaller games that are here still have huge teams in my mind. Like, when we were talking to the guys for Phantom Doctrine, they were saying that, we're kind of a small, mid-sized team, like 50 people. To me, that's a huge team.
That's great.
But to them, that's a small team.
Yeah, when you compare it to someone like EA, who's got probably thousands on the payroll,
right?
And some of the majority of the teams, when you talk to indie devs, are like, "Hey, we have three people, or me and one other guy, and that's it."
Yeah,
like that's your team. and all of them are like, what, half of them, over half of them are self-funded.
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were talking last night about Larian Studios?
Larian.
How when they did their Kickstarter for Divinity Original Sin 2, they made so much money. Like, what was it? $600,000, $500,000 in the first 24 hours?
In the first, like, 2 hours.
What,
yeah, 2-3 hours.
Like, 2-3 hours.
In the first hour, they reached their first stretch goal.
Yeah.
It was $500,000.
That's insane.
And the
that's
first,
insane.
At the end of the first day, they made $900,000. And on day two, at sometime in the morning around, I think it was noonish, they hit over $1 million.
Which was great because, like, in that video, you could see them, like, they're excited and excited. But, like, day two, they're like, oh, shit. The panic set in of, oh, God.
Sorry, correction. The first hour, they hit, like, 200,000.
250,000.
The first 4 hours, they hit their first stretch goal or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch it. Point is, a lot of money.
Point is, a shitload of money and not a lot of time.
Even, exactly.
Like, everything was freaking out. Even the computers were shutting down. The laptop was shutting down. Hilarious.
Everything.
And then, like, the TV, everything.
Their mic, their TV, their laptop. And, like, in that order, I would panic. I would just wave at the camera. We're done, guys. Pack it in. But those guys, I got to say, what a cool bunch of dudes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, we got to play Divinity, which was, like, I had a blast. We already kind of talked about it. Brett, you sucked at it.
No.
No, you did. I mean, you did, though.
Poor Brett.
I was okay.
You ran away. We'll get into this. I'll parade you on the way home.
I was trying to get you to die. That's what was happening. That was
obviously, you were doing a great job. Let me run away from the wizard who's squishy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Fucker.
Yeah, no, they were really cool guys, though. Yeah. Like, sitting there talking to them, we were talking to several of the developers, and they've been around since 1996, which I find to be
Micah
fascinating.
Micah and Karan, those guys were amazing.
But they've, just the fact that they are such a, still in any studio,
mm-hmm.
but have been around for that long and seem, you know, they haven't let the fame get to them.
Not at all. They were so down to earth. They were willing to talk with us. The biggest connection we had, sorry guys, was that we were D&D players and I got to geek out D&D wise.
Big surprise.
Shut up.
No, it was actually fun talking.
Yeah,
about
it was just great talking with them. I got to pull out my new book that I got, Xanathar's Guide to Everything, and like, Kieran was like, oh man, I wanted to get that so bad. I'm like, I know, it's amazing.
Side note, is that a special release with the book cover? Is that
it's the leather bound special edition release.
So
yeah.
Fucking awesome.
Oh, of course it does. It's because it's fucking amazing.
Minus that.
Mine, of course. No, it's fine.
So did you guys know that they've been doing Divinity games for
probably
they've been doing Divinity games forever. Since 2002, they've brought out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 versions of Divinity in some form or fashion.
Keep it
up.
I
thought Original Sin was the
up.
Beginning, but Divine Divinity was the first game that they released.
Yeah.
And then Divinity Original Sin, I feel like, was probably the one that became closest to the D&D experience, and then now it's just
with it, where you got to see like the really interactive environments, all the in-depth role playing and storytelling and dialogue and all that shit,
right?
But cool guys, man.
Oh yeah, so cool. And then we wandered around, and I mean, we talked to the developers from, it was Cyberforge, is that what their name was? The Phantom Doctrine?
Creative Forge.
There we go. And talked to Blaze, which I thought was an awesome name.
Man.
And he was the...
also a cool guy.
Basically the marketing guy for the company.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was also like one, he was like, he's a huge history buff and loves like Cold War era history, which is why he was so excited to like make this game. He was like, I did all the research for it. Like, dude, that's like, you could tell it's a passion project for him.
Right. Yeah. They really put a lot of time and effort into this. And he was telling me that when researching the Cold War, like a lot of people assume that we had all the answers, but he was talking to me about how the United States during that time thought that Russia was trying to plot against them or something of that nature. And they were freaking out about that. But in reality, the doc, documents that have come out now show that Russia was basically scared of the United States the entire time. We're going to even get close to touching us.
Yeah.
But so there was like mixed signals coming in. So they thought it was like a Russia scary standoff everywhere or whatever.
It was a really scary standoff.
Like,
and man, like, that's amazing. For a game to explore that, that's so cool, man.
Yeah.
And you could tell, you know, talking with the rest of the, like, you know, the team there, we got an in-depth look at the game and they like walked us step by step through the gameplay, the mechanics, all the ins and outs. And everyone was just so enthusiastic about it. Everyone just had like, you could tell that they were like, man, we are so excited to show all of you this game. It was fucking awesome to see that kind of like passion. And like you said, 50 people working on that. Ugh.
A lot. Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah.
But small considering, I mean, how much depth is in that game? It's just, it's fascinating.
Mini games on top of other mini games.
Yeah. Exactly. So Lizette, what was one of the favorite game, your favorite games you saw while there?
Well, I was really filming the whole time.
Yeah.
Trying to get y'all on camera.
That's true.
That's fair.
Maybe we should talk about your overall experience since it's your first time at PAX.
Yeah.
Well, I had a buddy. I ran into a buddy over there in PAX South.
That's cool.
So that was cool. I got to, we just got to briefly talk. I mean, for me, it was just all about, I was just enamored with the whole like cosplay thing. I wanted
a lot
to see
of cool
more.
Cosplay. Yeah.
Like I think because like it's my inner like preteens kind of like started coming out when I used to be into anime, into manga and all that stuff. So I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to like, I don't know. Last night I was just like looking up a bunch of like cosplay videos and I just wanted to like, I was like, okay, well, now we got to get like a cooler camera. We got to like get shoot it in like 60 frames or 240 frames per second now so we can get like slow motion stuff. So I guess my inner geek of like just wanting to film came out even more.
That's cool.
But I did want to actually like play more games. Yeah. I think the first day that we were there, like that's kind of I got to play actually Dauntless.
Yeah.
So that was really fun.
We haven't talked about that yet. We gotta bring that up.
Yeah. So we actually were in line and we met these people in front of us and so we just started talking to them and it was just fun. And I don't know. I guess what I really liked about the whole experience is that you get to talk to people and it's like as if you're friends already, like for a while.
It's something that's so magical about the video game industry. Like we are all connected via these games that we enjoy, games that we haven't experienced yet or have experienced together. It's a shared medium that everyone gets to enjoy.
That was something that was interesting hearing the developers talk about that too, especially the ones that were from out of the country. They were saying that there was a different like feeling here than at the other PAX events in which everybody was super friendly and nice. And I think I heard you say something about
that Southern hospitality, man. Yeah. We're in Texas. Welcome y'all.
So that was really cool.
Yeah.
But,
man. Yeah, there was a free play section on the third floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I went upstairs just to check it out. And then I was like, holy crap, man. Like I just saw like all a bunch of the old Nintendos, like the originals. And then there was also a section where you can just like watch people play games. And then there was like on the second floor, there was like people dancing also. So that was cool. And since I like dancing, so that was something that appealed to me.
Yeah. They had that Let's Dance playing there. So you could like, it's kind of cool. They had like a full stage set up for people to play Let's Dance.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you may feel a little dorky at first, but once you see everybody else getting into it, you're like, man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like people like really getting into dancing. Like I watched this little girl and her, I guess I'm assuming it was her older brother, but they were dancing to Uptown Funk. And I was like, man, how freaking fun. What must have that been for her?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There was Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style.
Two people. That's when I heard, I was like, oh, I like that song. Dun, 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 dun. And I was like, came over and I was like, oh God, that's funny. Like two awkward people just dancing. Like totally do that. They were awesome. They owned it. That's what was amazing.
Yeah. There were no awkward people. Like they were all everybody was cool that day.
Yeah.
Get up there and dance. Yeah. That was fun.
Those are the things I wish there was one extra day where we could go around and explore all that stuff, because yeah, like you said, there's the dance things, there's concerts that happen around there,
right?
They have free play areas for every type of thing. So you have your console free play, you have your PC free play, you have there's a handheld free play area. I don't know if you saw that or not, but that's a place where you can just, there's a bunch of couches and beanbags and stuff where people can just sit there and now play their Switches and their 3DSs and all that stuff.
I can kind of get that concept. At the same time, I was also a little grossed out by looking at some of those people.
lounge in there.
Yeah.
I was like, you are sitting in a soup of gross right now because some of them looked a little unshowered.
They were just so excited to be there.
So excited they didn't shower for a week. They didn't shower that
dude. Morning. Some of them, yeah.
They want to miss anything.
Yeah, that's one thing I will say. I'm not always thrilled about PAX is people who decide like I don't need a shower. I'm going to walk around this crowded expo hall.
What are you talking about? They're trying to save water.
That's true.
I think we can go and spare it. I think we can go and spare a couple drops so you can clean your stanky beehole.
Yeah.
That's real,
yo. Anyways, yeah. Dauntless. Let's talk about that one because that was fucking Dauntless. Great.
I forgot about that. That was amazing. So you guys got to play last year.
We played last year and lost. Really,
and this year it was so cool because, I mean, apparently they've changed so much to this game.
Yeah.
And
drastic.
I never got
drastic
to play it.
Not drastic changes, but just a lot of additions.
Right. And the game's fun. It's really good.
Really good.
It's really challenging.
Fighting all the behemoths.
Again, back to the cooperative experience.
Yep. All the classes you play have like a big, like, key role in the combat, whether it's, you know, removing armor or striking fast or controlling the environment. We talked with Chris Fox again. What a friggin' great guy. He's
super
one of the
cool dude.
Yeah, dude. And you could tell like he's like, I am tapped out. Like we've been at this all day. But he played with us, which was great.
He beat it.
We tied. We didn't die, but we didn't win either. The behemoth ran away.
But you gotta admit, I mean, considering we had Devin, who's not the best at these games, and me, who hasn't played them before. I mean, they're pretty good.
I really just want to strangle you with your cord right now. I really just want to make that happen.
Yeah, don't do that. Okay. Please stay. Keep it away from me.
No, Chris was great, and he gave us another interview to kind of follow up, which we'll release later. But, man, it's you can just tell, so much fun to hang out with these guys, as always.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm trying to think
we also saw Clint again from Carolina Gaming Tables.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Clint and Jody, cool. They were there again.
There was a lot more than what I remember of tabletop and role playing game. Kind
they
of
really
stuff
amped
there.
Up the tabletop games this time. It's like there was a lot more board games, a lot more like role playing games being played, which was freaking great in my eyes. I love watching that shit. Like being played by a huge group of people and people who haven't met before were playing board games together. I mean, that's so cool.
We should make a day next time when we come up here to do that one night.
Yeah. Just like actually just play.
They run till I think 12 o'clock or something like that doing that stuff. So we could hit that up afterwards and just go play some games, order in some freaking pizza and some lots of energy drinks and just go all out.
That sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
Minus the energy drinks.
Do you want a heart attack?
I mean, no.
Yeah, minus the energy drinks. Yeah. I don't need my heart to fucking explode.
Every time I go to QuakeCon, they have the balls energy drinks stacked up.
Absolutely not.
Miles high.
Nope.
I'm like, oh my
god. This time it was 20. What was it? The shot?
5 hour. Five hour energy or whatever. Yeah.
Side note with QuakeCon, I don't know how those people do it because some people like do a chugging contest of fucking balls.
No.
I'm like, dude.
They're gonna die one day while trying to squeeze out a turd, and that's the legacy you're gonna leave behind. How did he die, doctor? He chugged energy drinks, tried to take a shit, and died.
That'd be a terrible thing on your gravestone to say.
Deserve it.
Died from shit.
Bunches of shits.
Anyways.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cosplayers. As we talked
a lot
about
of cosplayers.
Earlier.
Yeah. We got to see them. Dauntless had their one of the.
I didn't realize
that
was
costume.
For them.
She made that.
Later.
She said she made that costume in like a couple of months. Yeah. It was so insane. You'll see it on our Instagram and other friggin' whatever.
I think she said she was also an illustrator.
Yeah.
I forgot
what she actually worked on the game.
That's cool.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, Jesus Christ. Amazing.
Yeah, and amazing. Austin, you saw some of our friends like R-Square cosplay, right?
Yeah, so I just went out to the front and I was like, I knew they were going to be here, but obviously we're in the expo hall most of the time. And I was like, oh shit, there they are. So I said hi. They were like, oh yeah, I remember you guys. Love the videos.
Yep, check them out. R-Square cosplay. And they had some great variations on their costumes this time that was Overwatch themed.
Yeah, they had the summer Soldier 76.
Yep.
I guess.
And his barbecue apron outfit. Yeah. So cool.
And then I don't know what Rachel was in.
Well, she was in
Tracer, but
she was Tracer, but I can't remember which variation she was.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
So
there's so many.
Is for Rachel and Ryan.
Yeah, Rachel and Ryan. R Squared Cosplay. Go check them out. They do some great
Dallas
shit.
Base. No, Fort Worth base, actually.
Yeah, yeah. They're Fort Worth base, yeah. Man.
They
they're locals with us
every year.
No,
my
she's
goodness.
Rachel's amazing at making that shit. Like she's getting better and better with her cosplay building. So
she's gonna be. I mean, she hasn't won a lot of the contests already. I mean,
I hope they keep going. She, yeah,
yeah.
Just knock it out.
Have they been married yet?
No.
I know they're engaged.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. Congrats. Yeah.
Mazel tov to the
Mazel
happy tov. Couple.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff cosplay-wise. We saw Doomfist, which is pretty awesome.
There was a
badass Doomfist.
Had the hood on and everything. Oh, man. Wicked.
I saw somebody there that I feel like was an ARMS character. I was kind of expecting to see more ARMS characters this year.
Eh.
Because that's one thing that... Like, if ARMS wasn't received as well as I thought it would be, but it... did have a lot of really unique and cool looking characters that I could see cosplays coming out of. So hopefully one day like that'll have a resurgence and get a lot bigger and more exciting. We'll see that happen. I bet at bigger cons you'll see that a lot. But yeah, super cool. So any last words you guys have for PAX? Final closing thoughts?
It was a hell of a time. It was a lot of fun. I can't wait to see all the games that we got to play come out in this year and next.
The same. I think I'll be back next year.
Better
Heck
be.
Yeah.
Better be.
Yeah, you better.
Yeah, help me show around in front of the camera again.
We do have some codes for Dauntless, the closed beta. We'll put out more details later, but check out social media, Facebook.
Be on the lookout for some cool shit we got this year.
Yeah, we'll be giving away some stuff in the next few weeks to month, so stay tuned. Free stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. You may have benefit if you donate to us on Patreon. So you know,
wink.
That's a
shameless
that's an
plug. Wink
right there. Well, that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. Reminder: if you like listening to us, go over to iTunes and leave us a quick little review, and we'd really appreciate it. So stay tuned. We're going to take a break and come back with our upcoming video game releases and close out the podcast. Thank you guys for listening.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. Both of these games come out on January 23rd, which is pretty much the first thing, you know, that's coming out. We've had a few little
things coming
out.
Couple things.
This is the stuff that's worth talking about. First one is Lost Sphere on Switch, PS4, and PC. This is a game from Square Enix and Tokyo RPG Factory, where a young man who suffered a phenomenon that he had never seen faces an ominous power that threatens the fabric of reality. Awaken this power of memory to restore what was lost. This is a spiritual successor to I Am Setsuna, which you guys may have heard of. So this is the next iteration. It's been out in Japan for about a year now.
What?
But it's coming to North America on January 23rd. In addition, on January 23rd, we have The Inpatient on the PlayStation VR. The Inpatient is a PSVR exclusive set in the Blackwood Sanatorium 60 years prior to the award-winning Until Dawn video game. This is made by Supermassive Games. You take on the role of an amnesiac inpatient who must find out who you are and why you are in the sanatorium. With a branching narrative and different endings, every choice you make can dramatically and drastically affect the way the game plays out. So this could be like a party game where somebody's in the VR headset and everybody around is enticing you to make decisions, just like Until Dawn. So
I dig that.
Those are two games we got coming out. So, that's going to wrap up our show this week, guys. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcasts. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please be sure and go over to iTunes and leave us a review or tell a friend.
We also have a Patreon, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause so we can bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Even something as little as $1 a month, $12 a year, that's nothing. You can get access to early content, videos, and a lot of other cool prizes. So please head over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. And with that, I'm Devin DeRee.
I'm Austin Browse.
And I'm Brad Yanosky.
And you've been listening to
The Inner Gamer.
Okay, I want to go back and play video games now.
Bye, guys.
We'll be right back.
What the fuck was that?
That's going to be cut out.
Never
obviously.
Do that again. Big dick swinging. Big dick swinging. Big dicks. Big dick swinging.
Big dicks are swinging, and I'm too quiet now. Big dick swinging. 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 Turn me up a little bit more.
What the fuck did you start, Devin?
Big dick
swinging. It's our now how we check mics. Big dicks.
The biggest of the dicks swung on my.
Okay.
Oh, you throw in a past tense.